We've made it our point in the year 2020 to begin thinking about the mission that Jesus came here to fulfill, and to take that mission and to make that mission a central part of our life, to make it our focus, so that we would have a way to know our place in God's grand scheme. One of the things that we've begun doing is we've begun gathering at my house on Monday nights. We've been gathering at 7 o'clock, but it seems that that's a little bit early, and some folks just have to work and they can't make it at 7 o'clock. So I forgot to tell Ron earlier. We decided we're going to move that to 7:30, and that way more folks would be able to not have work conflicts and they could join us for our prayers. We're convinced prayer works. We need a relationship with God. And there are so many things that we have to pray about. A lot of folks are sick. We're glad you stayed home if you're not feeling good. With all of the virus and I like Ron's word for it, crud, that's going around. If you're not feeling good, stay home. It's not that we don't want to see you, but boy, we've got to lift this thing. And if you're like the rose out, we need a new rule for the rose. No hugs and no kissing. Because that is just spreading these germs, and it's so difficult to deal with. Well, Jesus, while he was here, had to deal with the same kinds of things that we have to deal with. Jesus had to confront issues of poverty. We have to confront those same kinds of issues, especially living here in Eugene. It seems like we have a real homelessness problem in the city of Eugene. And you can't go hardly anywhere without confronting those folks who are having a difficult time navigating this life. And I wonder, I don't know if you're like me, but I struggle to understand how God wants me to react to those people that are having difficulty. How does God want me to react to those people who are in poverty? Like I say, I struggle with this. It's nice for me to know when I struggle with this that there were people that struggled with the same kinds of things that were around Jesus in the first century. We just read from Mark the 14th chapter how Jesus, reclining at dinner, was anointed with the oil, and somebody said, "You should have sold that and given the money to the poor." And Jesus had to correct them. So let's see if we can't at least get some understanding of what Jesus was here to do as he confronted the poor, and maybe that will help us as we try to deal with confronting the poor that are around us. The poor are often, so often, marginalized. They're around us every day, but we can become desensitized to their plight. We step over them. And as we step over them, it's as if we almost don't even see them and the things that they're going through. In Ecclesiastes, the ninth chapter, and beginning the reading in Ecclesiastes 9 at about verse 13, the wise man talked about the status of the poor. He said, "This I came to see as wisdom under the sun, and it impressed me." He said, "There was a small city with few men in it, and a great king came to it, surrounded it, constructed large siege works against it. But there was found in it a poor wise man, and he delivered the city by his wisdom. But no one remembered the poor man. So I said, wisdom is better than strength, but the wisdom of the poor man is despised, and his words are not heeded. The words of the wise heard in quietness are better than the shouting of a ruler among fools. Wisdom is better than the weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. I'm reminded of a time when some whales were trapped in the ocean ice up by Barrow, Alaska. Now, that's not the end of the world, but you can see the end of the world from Barrow. This is way, way, way up there. It's as far north as you can go on the North American continent. Well, these three gray whales got trapped in the ice. And people tried to free them. They did everything. We brought in icebreakers from the Soviet Union. They couldn't do it. The oil companies brought in all of their equipment. They couldn't do it. Nobody could figure out how to free these three trapped gray whales. Well, one of the Navy guys that lived in Barrow, who couldn't understand why people were getting in such a dither over three gray whales that were trapped in the ice, decided that he was tired of all of these highfalutin folks coming to Barrow, Alaska. They were just making it unbearable for him to live there. All of their wonderful things that they were bringing with them. So he decided he was going to free the three trapped whales. He went out on the ice with a chainsaw and a big long stick. And he cut a hole in the ice, and he pushed down on one side of the ice and used the stick to push that block of ice underneath of the other ice that was there, and the gray whales went from the hole where they were stuck to the new hole that he'd made. And he walked a little further, and he cut another hole in the ice. And he did exactly the same thing. All of the wise people that were trying to free those gray whales couldn't figure out how to do it. And this one poor fellow that lived in Barrow, Alaska, who was tired of everybody bringing all of their stuff into his city, decided he would free the gray whales and everybody else would go home. And nobody wanted to listen to that poor fellow because he was just a poor native. Well, that's what the wise man is talking about. It was a poor wise man who figured out how to save the city, but nobody listened to him. And why didn't they listen to him? Because he's poor. And if you're poor, you can't be important. Now, Jesus saw that when he got here. And Jesus begins his ministry by talking about his relationship with the people that he was encountering. In Luke, the 4th chapter, and beginning there at verse 16, you find Jesus coming to Nazareth, where he'd been brought up, and as was his custom, he entered into the synagogue on the Sabbath, and he stood up to read. Now, synagogue worship was different than what we're familiar with. A person would stand up to read, and the leader of the synagogue would take him a scroll, and he would open the scroll, and he would read from that portion of the scroll, and when he's done, he would give it back to the leader of the synagogue, and then he would sit down. That was kind of the way their worship went. Ron would have had a hard time because he couldn't figure out who was going to be the reader that day. But Jesus begins to read, and he read from the Isaiah scroll. And he talked about what he was going to do. Now, listen to the way that he describes his ministry from the Isaiah scroll. He took the prophet Isaiah, and the book of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. He opened the book and found the place where it is written, The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because He's anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, and to free those who are oppressed. Proclaim the favorable year of the Lord. He closed the book, gave it back to the attendant, and he sat down. And all the eyes of the synagogue were fixed on him, and he began to say to them, "Today this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." So let's think about how Jesus describes his mission. He came to poor people, those that were at the very bottom of the social pyramid, those people that had nothing. He came to poor people. Beyond the poor people, he even talked to women. Can you imagine talking to a woman? You know, Jewish men prayed, and one of the three things that they thanked God for every day was that they were not a woman. Can you imagine the status that women had? He not only talked to women, he talked to Samaritans. Now, Samaritans didn't like Jews, and Jews didn't like Samaritans. It was worse than not liking them. Both sides thought that the other was just dogs. Jesus talked to a Samaritan woman. He talked to lepers. You talk about the bottom of the social pyramid. Lepers couldn't get any lower. If you were a leper in Jesus' day, you had to stay outside of the city, carry a bell, and cover your upper lip. If someone came within 10 feet of you, you had to immediately start ringing the bell and shouting, "Unclean," so that they wouldn't get close to you. Now, leprosy was a horrible disease, and it was contagious. So I understand where they were coming from. I understand what was going on, but Jesus talked to these folks. You know, there were Sadducees that said that they had never passed by a leper that they didn't throw a rock at. That's the way that these people were treated. Not only did he talk to lepers, he talked to prostitutes. And even, maybe even worse than prostitutes, he talked to tax collectors. Jesus didn't ignore the people that were at the bottom of the social pyramid. Jesus never stepped over anybody. You know, that's just pretty much the fact of the matter. But not only that, he also talked to people that were at the pinnacle of the social pyramid. He also talked to the leaders, to people who had everything going for them. And what's amazing about Jesus is that he did not marginalize anyone. Jesus' mission was to teach the same thing to everybody. And what Jesus came to do made as much sense to a pauper in the street as it did to a man sitting in the king's palace. I've often wondered whether what I teach would have any meaning to a person who is suffering from homelessness. I've often wondered if what I teach would have any meaning to a person who was running for president. It ought to make just as much sense to the pauper as it does to the prince. And that's what Jesus did. He did not marginalize anyone that he came into contact with. God gave us some instruction in the Old Testament. And that instruction that God gives us is important. Oh, let me go back. I seem to have messed things up here. Let's get this back. So God gives us some instruction. We can learn about that instruction by reading the Old Testament. That's what Jesus had to work with when he was here. And I'm not exactly sure what to make of it, but let's just look at what God had told the people of Israel. The first thing that he told the people of Israel was, don't take advantage of a poor man just because he's poor. That's Exodus, the 23rd chapter. In Exodus 23 and beginning at about verse 6, when Moses is setting up 70 who are going to help him in the job of judging the people of Israel, one of the things that he said was, you shall not pervert justice that's due to your needy brother in his dispute. Now, I don't know if you've ever been in a legal dispute. I have. And one of the things that I learned is you never get in a fight in court with a guy who's got a free attorney. Because even if you're right, he'll bury you with paperwork and you cannot prevail. Even though your cause is just, you cannot prevail. They take advantage of you just because you're poor. And Moses is telling the people, you cannot do that. You cannot pervert the justice that's due to your needy brother in his dispute. So don't take advantage of him. And then in Proverbs, the 23rd chapter, at verse 23, the wise man said, these are the sayings of the wise, to show partiality in judgment is not good. Now, Exodus 23 at verse 3 will help us to understand a little bit more about what the wise man said in Proverbs 24. Exodus 23 at verse 2 beginning, he says, you shall not follow the masses in doing evil, nor shall you testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after a multitude in order to pervert justice, nor shall you be partial to a poor man in his dispute. So you don't favor the rich man, and you also don't favor the poor man. Now, there's something about seeing a poor man in court that makes me think that we have to level the playing field. This guy has been beaten down so many times by people who have taken advantage of him that now I need to give him an advantage. It's kind of like applying for a job. And you find out that some people, when they apply for a job, because of past discrimination, get extra points added to their application. He says, don't do that. Don't be partial to the poor man. Don't take advantage of him. And don't give him an advantage in his case. Leviticus, the 19th chapter, you shall do no injustice in judgment. You shall not be partial to the poor, nor defer to the great, but you are to judge your neighbor fairly. Deuteronomy, the 1st chapter, again, back to Moses. I charged your judges at the time, saying, hear the cases between your fellow countrymen, judge righteously between a man and his fellow countrymen, or with the alien who is with him. You shall not show partiality in judgment. You shall hear the small and the great alike. You shall not fear man. Judgment is God's. And then in this, the 16th chapter at verse 19, well, beginning at about verse 18, God is giving Moses some instruction. Then he says, appoint for yourself judges and officers in all your town, which the Lord your God is giving to you according to your tribes. They shall judge the people with righteous judgment. You shall not distort justice. You shall not be partial. You shall not take a bribe, for a bribe blinds the eye of the wise and perverts the word of the righteous. Justice and only justice you shall pursue, that you may live and possess the land in which the Lord your God is giving you. So, become like God. Deuteronomy, the 15th chapter, at verse 7. If there's a poor man with you, one of your brothers, in any of your towns in the land which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart, nor shall you close your hand from your poor brother, but you shall freely open your hand to him and shall generously lend him sufficient for his need in whatever he lacks. But beware that no base thought is in your heart saying, wait a minute, I'm supposed to lend to him that which he needs, but the seventh year is getting close, the year of Jubilee, the year of remission. What happened in the seventh year? All debts were forgiven. Your eye is hostile towards your poor brother and you give him nothing. Then he may cry against to the Lord against you, and it will be a sin to you. You shall generously give to him. Your heart shall not be grieved when you give to him, because for this thing the Lord your God will bless all of your work and all of your undertakings. The poor will never cease to be in the land. Therefore I command you, saying, you shall freely open your hand to your brother, to your needy, and to the poor in your land. In 2 Thessalonians, the Apostle Paul says that we, nevertheless, in spite of all of these things, hold everyone accountable. There are a lot of reasons why people are poor. One of the reasons why people are poor, and it's by no means perhaps the major reason why people are poor, is that they don't want to work. And 2 Thessalonians 3, the Apostle Paul says, we command you, brethren, if any will not work, neither should he eat. Now that sounds harsh, but we don't defer to the poor. We hold them accountable in the same way that we hold everyone accountable. So, I come to the conclusion. It seems to me that there are two things that just cannot coexist. You will never find these two things in the same place. James tells us in James 2, beginning at verse 1, that the first of those things that cannot coexist with the other is respect of persons. Respect of persons has some odd meanings in a sense. Literally, according to the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia, respect of persons means to lift up the face. It's the way that a king would look at someone who came before him to make a request. And that person bowing before the king would reach down and he would lift up his face. That meant that the king was listening to what that person had to say. He's not marginalizing him. He's lifting up his face. Now, it began to have an unfortunate meaning that you accepted the person instead of the cause. There's a lot of work that's been done looking at whether pretty people, handsome men, pretty women, make more money than ugly people do. And I'm concerned about that.
because I have a feeling I know which side of that seesaw I'm on. Well, it turns out that pretty people make more money than ugly people. That's not the way it ought to be. That's lifting up the face based on who a person is, not what they do. So that's respect of persons. And you can't have that and have the faith of Jesus. Those two things cannot be in the same place. James says, "My brethren, have not the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ with an attitude of personal favoritism. If a man comes into your assembly with a gold ring and dressed in fine clothes, and there also come in a poor man in dirty clothes, and you pay special attention to the one who's wearing the fine clothes and say, 'You sit here in a good place,' and you say to the poor man, 'You sit over there,' or 'Sit down by my footstool,' have you not made distinctions among yourselves and become judges with evil motives? You have dishonored the poor man." And then he concludes in verse 7, "Do not the rich blaspheme the name by which you have been called?" We can't do that. And I suppose if you think about how that's played out in history, a long time ago, churches had a big potbelly stove in the middle of the building. And in the wintertime, the coveted places were close to the potbelly stove. It makes sense, doesn't it? In the summertime, when it was sweltering hot, the coveted places were close to the windows. And more than that, the coveted place was sitting next to a woman, because they can work a fan back and forth like this for hours and not get tired. And if you sit real close, they'll generally kind of fan you. Don't give a coveted place to the man in the fine clothes. Don't look for the man in the shabby clothes to give him the coveted place. Treat all men equally. You can't have respect of persons and be like God, because the faith of Jesus reached out to the Samaritan woman in John the 4th chapter. It reached to Cornelius the Greek in Acts the 10th chapter. It reached to the people who were claiming that they had favored status among the Jews. Romans the 2nd chapter. Those who serve God are acceptable with God, and they are acceptable according to their deeds. This is a painting by Norman Rockwell. It depicts that little girl. Her name is Ruby Bridges. She really does have a name. She was allowed to attend a segregated school because of what the court decided. You couldn't have black children attending a poor school and white children attending good schools. That was not going to be allowed. She had to be escorted into the school by four marshals that walked her everywhere she went that day. And I think what bothers me about that is, as bad as the open practice of discrimination against the poor is, and we do openly discriminate against the poor. In Luke the 14th chapter, Jesus says, when you give a feast, don't just invite your neighbors. Invite the poor man. Don't marginalize the poor. Don't discriminate against them. Invite everybody. That's the open practice. But you know, what's even worse is secretly practicing it.
It's the man who listens to God. God says, don't glean the corners of your fields, leave that for the poor. And then when the poor man comes to his door and says, give me a loaf of bread, he says, no, I already had to leave the corners of my field. I'm not going to help you. It's easy to secretly practice it. Even when we think that we're not practicing it. Job the 13th chapter. Marvelous passage. And I can see right now we're running out of time. What's God expect of me? Just a couple of passages. I'll put them up here on the screen. But the image probably says it all. We're not going to take the time to read through them all. Matthew the 13th chapter, excuse me, the 23rd chapter, that great scene at the judgment when Jesus says, inasmuch as you did it to the least of one of these, my brethren, you did it to me. Ephesians the 4th chapter and at verse 28, we're given explicit instructions that we need to work with our hands and we need to support our families and to have so that we can help the poor. Galatians the 6th chapter at verse 10. As much as there is the opportunity, we need to do good to all men, especially those of the household of faith. But I want you to notice it does not say only to those of the household of faith. If that's what we see when we see Galatians the 6th chapter at verse 10, then we've marginalized an awful lot of people. Jesus never did that. And then finally, Mark the 14th chapter, beginning at verse 3. There were a lot of people that watched what that woman did and had the wrong impression about what Jesus' mission was. They thought that Jesus came here to end poverty. That's not why he came. Poor are going to be with us. They said how foolish it is for people to take this money and use it on Jesus and his needs, his wishes, as opposed to spending all of this money on the poor. Jesus, this is why you came. You were supposed to take care of the poor. Jesus says, no, that's not it. You've missed the point if you think that's why I came. Now, I say that that's an important verse, at least to me. And I still struggle with it. I struggle with this every day. Trying to understand what my relationship is supposed to be with the poor. But I know I'm going to have one. And I'm not going to have it based on my selfish desires. It may be that you look around you and you see rampant poverty and you want to respond. Look to Jesus because he'll give you the answer of the best way to do it. You know, when you don't know Jesus, these kinds of things just aren't really very important in your life. When you know Jesus, you have to think about these kinds of things. Put on Jesus in baptism and your life becomes a lot more complicated. Because you have to now respond to people the way Jesus would have responded to people. And if that's not what you've done, if you put on Jesus in baptism, but then you tried to let two things coexist, the faith of Jesus and partiality, respect of persons, then you're going to have to get rid of that. You're going to have to understand, just like James told those people, you cannot let those two things into your life. Repent. Get back to Jesus. Pray and ask for his forgiveness and his strength. It may be that we can pray with you. The effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much, James says. And because of that, he says, confess your faults one to another. Pray one for another that you may be healed. But we want you to think about it. I don't have all of the answers. But like I said, when you put on Jesus, your life begins to consist of more things than just yourself. And that's a good thing. I think most people want that. We're going to stand, and James is going to lead us in a song.